Welcome to the Outthinkers Podcast. Plug into fascinating minds and breakthrough ideas that are transforming industries and the world. I'm your host, Kyan Krippendorf, founder of Outthinker Networks, a global think tank comprised of corporate strategists, innovators, and entrepreneurs that are shaping the future of business. If this describes you, join us at outthinker.com. Now, let's dive into this week's episode.
I think strategy and culture is probably one of the most quoted relationships in business, but probably one of the most misinterpreted or understudied in reality. I think often if you're a new CEO or C-suite executive or entrepreneur, you'd start with a strategy, look at the market, look at the customers, and work through where do you play, where do you focus? And then the back end often ask the question, how do we do it? And what do we need from the organization? If you're a consultant, it's the last two slides in the pack, which says something. And the challenge with that is that there's often a big gap. You either overestimate what the organization can do as you think about the future strategy, or you underestimate because actually the organization could do more.
That was David Lancefield, catalyst, strategist, and coach to senior executives, professionals, and entrepreneurs. Over the last 25 years, David has worked with organizations on strategy, innovation, and culture from startups to blue chips while building and leading successful businesses and client accounts within PwC. He also speaks, facilitates, and hosts the Lancefield on the Line podcast and writes for Harvard Business Review and is a contributing editor for Strategy Plus Business, as well as being published by Forbes and the Financial Times, among others. As heard in the highlighted clip, David sits at this critical intersection of strategy, leadership, and culture. And in this thought-provoking conversation, we discuss that intersection. But where we often treat strategy and culture as being one dependent on the other, David brings to us the perspective that the two directly support and inform one another, and that building them in tandem as a competitive advantage is too often overlooked. We dive into this topic with discussing how the definition of culture is not just a set of beliefs, as many people assume. How heads of culture and HR are often kept out of the strategy conversations and treated separately, but should actually work hand in hand with culture informing strategy. You know how every strategy effort typically ends with communication and a cultural alignment, and he explains why we should be thinking about that differently. How to identify your culture catalysts, as he calls them, these people who naturally exhibit the desired behaviors and enlist them to enact change, as well as where to start in shaping your culture. Ladies and gentlemen, David Lancefield.
David, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. It has been such a pleasure getting to study and prepare for this. I've been following your work since you began this, but thanks for being here with us.
Pleasure. Likewise.
I'd like to open up with the first question that I ask all of our guests, just to get us to know you a little bit more personally. Could you complete this sentence for me? If you really know me, you know that.
I have a dry sense of humor. I have what some people call positive impatience, lots of curiosity, and I'm a recovering trumpeter.
Trumpeter? Wow. When did you play trumpet and what kind of music did you play?
I played too many years ago, decades rather than years now, and I've recently restarted classical mostly, and then when I was feeling a bit looser, some jazz on the sidelines also to make a little bit of money when I was a student.
Oh, wow, you were good. I played trumpet growing up, but never got brave enough to try jazz, so. Great, let's get back to the topic at hand. We're talking about strategy, we're talking about culture and the interconnections between those. So what's your definition of strategy?
For me, strategy is about a collection or a portfolio of choices that help you get closer to your ambition, focusing on what you do, how you do it, for whom you do it, and also specifying how you stand out from the competition. And that could be for an organization, a team, or an individual.
Excellent. Now I can see why the kind of the human side of strategy is so central to your work. Just tell us, you got a chance to work with John Katzenberg, I believe.
Absolutely, yes, yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about him? Because I have, of course, known of him for a long time, but maybe some of our listeners haven't yet.
I mean, he's one of the I guess, one of the real experts in everything culture, organizational culture. I got to know him through when PwC bought Booz & Company, and he was part of that group. And he was a good age. But he's written books, including most recently The Critical Few. And anybody who's, I think, studied or practiced, most importantly, culture, will probably have some of his concepts in their minds as they do it, whether they attribute them to him or not. And he's a brilliantly articulate, humble, and very curious individual. Really inspiring.
Yeah. Great. So you have also been a strategy consultant. So you have gotten to experience both of those sides. So I'd like to know, how do you think about that relationship between strategy and culture? Is it develop the strategy and then align the culture to the strategy? Is it the strategy needs to fit the existing culture? Kind of that chicken egg problem. How do you think about what strategy is? Is it alignment? Is it shifting?
I think it's symbiosis. I think strategy and culture is probably one of the most quoted relationships in business, but probably one of the most misinterpreted or understudied in reality. I think often, as you said there, if you're a new CEO or C-suite executive or entrepreneur, you'd start with a strategy, look at the market, look at the customers, and work through where do you play, where do you focus? And at the back end, often ask the question, how do we do it? And what do we need from the organization? If you're a consultant, it's the last two slides in the pack, which says something. And the challenge with that is that there's often a big gap. You either overestimate what the organization can do as you think about the future strategy, or you underestimate because actually the organization could do more. So my take would be you have to start together, understanding the culture. What are the strengths of the organization in terms of, I mean, for me, culture is about how work gets done, focusing on behaviors. And so you have to understand, okay, what are we capable of? When we're at our best, what can we do? Because for me, that informs strategic possibilities. It also informs limitations. So for example, if you think there's a big market opportunity in a particular segment, geography, focusing on particular customers, the question should be, okay, so how far away from where we are now is that? How much of a stretch? Because that informs the structures you use. If it's a big stretch, you might look at acquisition or a partnership. The challenge is if you don't do that together, you're missing a trick. And actually, I think the people who often work on organizational culture have a lot to say in the shaping of strategy, but they're considered separate, which I think is a big mistake.
Can you just tell me a little bit more about why you were so specific about you defining culture? When you talk about culture, you're talking about behaviors, because there's also ideas of culture as beliefs, or it is... lots of different theories. So why do you be so specific about specifying that you define it by behavior?
Because ultimately culture is about what you do, obviously informed by beliefs and values and traits. But ultimately, if you're looking to shape or evolve a culture, it's about what you actually do in practice. Now, of course, what's going on in your mind, how you feel informs that. But if you can't specify and define, okay, what behaviors do we want to change? Frankly, it becomes quite aloof as a concept, something you talk about rather than something you practice.
We had Mike Tushman on this podcast, and I guess because I went to school under kind of where he came from, we learned his congruence model. That's sort of what was hammered into my head. And that begins with tasks and behaviors, and then formal and things like that.
And one thing that I've done, and many other people I know have done, is if you have to write down in a few sentences what you want people to do, and not tell them, but often they have to write it. It's not trying to constrain them, but actually calls out, okay, can I do it? Do I want to do it? Am I able to do it? And it identifies what they need as support, whether that's for everything from psychological safety, for coaching, development, but it gets practical and it gets real.
That's great. Yeah, that's where reality, kind of the conceptual touches reality. So what happens when strategy and culture are not well aligned? You have any examples of when that happens?
Well, I remember walking into one organization, a successful tech company, and I was invited by the CEO and one of his team members, and we were going to start some work. And they were award-winning on culture. Everyone knew of their great work. You walked around the offices, plaques on the wall, great buzz, great feeling, close to high-fiving each other. It was a fantastic atmosphere. And they talked a lot about that. And then I asked some questions around, okay, so who are you trying to delight as customers? You know, the jobs to be done. Who are you trying to serve and how are you trying to serve? And I talked about the competitive markets that they were operating and saying, wow, must be a tough gig. How are you standing out? Now, it was quite palpable, literally physiologically, how they came across. They went from being very articulate, confident, to frankly stumbling because they spent so much time on the culture. The organization was humming and buzzing and absolutely high, you know, on every survey you could imagine, doing really well. But I got the sense pretty quickly that they hadn't thought enough about where they were heading. It may sound like a crude analogy, but it was like they were having, you know, some drinks on the Titanic and not thinking about the iceberg coming towards them. Now, they had done some work, but the risk is that you're doing work on the organization and it's heading in the wrong direction. And frankly, you're waiting for some form of disruption from an aggressive competitor somewhere.
Yeah, fascinating. And it's the rare person, or maybe it's, I don't know if it's a skill or permission to do so, but that can both span across vision and strategy and also culture. They often sit in different parts of, you know, top leadership
team. I mean, the best strategy work that I've seen and experienced has been where people from all backgrounds work together. Not everyone. But rather than it being, oh, the strategy people, and then they hand it off to the HR people or to the operations people. The operations, the finance, procurement, legal, they're involved right from the beginning. Not to just to give technical advice, but actually to think through, can we do it? Should we do it? What are the possibilities? What are the constraints? What are the obstacles? Not only for their insights, but also they become advocates earlier in the journey. And to answer your previous question, you know, leaving culture too late when you're doing strategy not only misses an opportunity, but actually, I'm not a big fan of buy-in, but because buy-in assumes that you're sort of something's done to you and you have to agree to it. Whereas actually, great strategy work involves an organization in sharing their ideas, or their hopes, their fears, what they think they should be doing, and then genuinely empowering them to make choices in their own locus, in their team, for themselves, about where they focus, where they play. What Roger Martin talks about, you know, in terms of cascading strategy, as opposed to it being done somewhere in the organization and then effectively pushed out. And it's like you're in receive mode. Thank you very much. I better go and do it. Whereas culture and strategy, if you start together, you do the what and the how right from the beginning.
So I was in a meeting a couple of weeks ago with a group of chief strategy officers. We're in Atlanta and we were talking about culture. What kept coming up for them was measurement. How do you measure? So if you could talk to us a little bit about that. I know you've written about, heard you talk about, and you've been thoughtful about that.
I think there's macro to micro measures when you think about culture and the coherence of strategy. The macro ones ultimately are, is the business delivering the impact you're intending? Shareholder value all the way to societal and systemic impacts, that broader concepts. If you then flip all the way to the micro measures, it ultimately culture change or evolution of culture, as John Katzenbach would say, you can't change culture, you can evolve it. That's what he would say. You'd look at the experiments you're running, maybe in a division, a business unit, an area, on practicing new behaviors and asking the questions, okay, so are we doing it? Are people engaged? Are they productive? Are they feeling it? So there's micro measures about how people are doing, all the way up to sort of more macro measures around, okay, how does that translate ultimately into business results? And you really need to build a portfolio of measures from that continuum, micro to macro. I see a lot of people just focusing on HR measures or just saying, okay, let's wait for the big macro measures. The trouble with that is culture change takes years, if not decades, if you're looking at large enterprises. So what you need to do is break down some of those measures into shorter term impacts that you're looking to achieve.
Got it. Yep. So it's a portfolio and there's sort of a stage of kind of engagement from not awareness. It's kind of almost like a funnel. I almost think it sounds almost like fascinating. So then we've set up the metrics and we understand how culture fits with strategy and strategy fits with the culture. Then we've laid out the metrics. So we can say we want to move from here to here in these ways. How do then we then do it? Is there a favorite model or set of steps or phases that you find most effective in seeking to achieve a culture change or shift or whatever, evolution?
I mean, the one thing we haven't talked about is capabilities, which for me is the glue between strategy and culture. And for me, these are the activities you have to master. the activities, the processes that you have to master in order to win. It could be you have to be great at sales or great at negotiations or customer service. And so when you talk about culture change, that's the how you do things, but it's how to what end. And many organizations have 3 to 5 key capabilities that they really master. So that's one element I think is critical in terms of providing more glue between culture and strategy. I think going forward, I think you have to, and this is John Katzenbach's work and others, it's focusing on, okay, given what the strategy requires of the organization, informed by an assessment of culture, what are those critical behaviors that you really need to master and show in those capabilities? And then very importantly, who are the people in the organization that can be the catalyst for the change? And often they are not the people at the top of the organization, not the people at the bottom. They're sort of informal leaders. The people that when everyone has a question or wants a bit of mentorship, they're the people that everyone goes to. These are the people who have the trust, respect of others. And how do you get them involved in shaping the culture? Because they're the people who effectively people tend to follow. And they need to be the ones practicing the behaviors.
Yeah, can I actually take a half step back? How do you identify those people?
Most culture work starts often in a division or a business unit. It may be an overall program of work across an organization, but you have to start somewhere. If you then ask around, whether it's conversation, interviews, questionnaires, and you ask the question, who do we look up to? Who do we respect? Who's the person who really gets things done? People can very quickly, and I've done this exercise many times, identify those people very quickly. And the key thing is, not only are they, if you like, voted upon or selected by the people in the team, the organization, but they also have a diversity in terms of representation and all forms of diversity. Because then you get different voices, people feel included, and you get a deeper sense of belonging in an exercise, which, let's face it, should be and is deeply challenging at times. You're looking to change how you work, why you come into work, and for what purpose. It's not analytical head stuff, it's heart stuff as well.
So if you don't mind just walking us through then what next, we've identified these people, we've activated them as being advocates. And then so if you could walk us through what the next stages are.
I think once you've identified the behaviors and the people, and again, this is not necessarily sequential. In practice, people do this all in the round. You don't do it as a, right, let me start here and start here. But the other exercise is, given the strategic priorities you will have been identified already or been identifying, it will then say, okay, so where do we start with some experiments, some initiatives, some changes? So you might say, okay, so let's focus on that geography, this team, this business unit. With this group of people really harnessing, you know, the ideas, being the advocates for them, how do we start experimenting in new ways of working? How do we work with customers in a new way? How do we negotiate with perhaps our supply chain partners in new ways and better ways? Identifying particular areas to experiment, test, learn, and then ultimately scale. And the important thing about scaling, if I may add, is it's not to necessarily create a format that you say, right, we fixed it here, let's just copy paste it across the organization. What you will have done, hopefully, is identified a success story, and then you want them to share their story with others and their colleagues in the organization and say, this is what worked for us. This is the impact we're looking to have. This is the reasons we're doing it vis-a-vis the strategy. You craft it in the way that works for you. The big mistake I think organizations try to do is they start some experiments, they fix on some formats, and then they try to push it to the organization. If you were one of those other groups that wasn't involved in the early waves, at best, you'd feel admiration and think, wow, let's try that. But most people would think, well, it worked for them, but it didn't work for us. So give people genuine empowerment to craft it in the way that works for them. That requires trust.
Yeah. Yep. I see. So it's not a process duplication a problem. It is a behavioral challenge. So that people have the flexibility to localize the right solution for their
situation.
And
that requires trust and belief in their ability. I think many people, and this, if you're in a traditional hierarchical bureaucratic organization, this will be a big shock because effectively many people will have been told what to do and forced in fixed roles. And then suddenly saying to them, go and craft it yourself, will be a big shock and probably a big gap. So again, part of the role of leadership is to provide support, coaching, enablement in that process, rather than saying, it worked over here, here's the strategy you've hopefully been involved in, go and do it. Most people would, you know, especially in the difficult environment many companies are in at the moment, think that feels a bit risky. So the question for leaders, how do you de-risk it and make it easier for people to contribute?
I have so many other questions for you. I know we're reaching the top of our time, but you just touched on one that she wrote a piece recently about entrepreneurship. And it sounds like you're describing an entrepreneurial kind of culture. And that is a deep passion and interest area for me. So I could ask you 100 questions, but just pretend I asked you the right question for that space. What do you have to say about that?
I love that framing. I think when people hear the word entrepreneurship, we immediately think of events, initiatives, hackathons, the 20% time, and they'd certainly play a role. But that often becomes quite theatrical. And there are a number of elements I tried to write about in that article, which have to be in place for entrepreneurship to be central to an organization rather than superficial, if you like, on top. So yeah, and it's quite common sense when you think about it. What are we here to do? What's the entrepreneurship trying to do in terms of the organization's ambition and strategy? Do you actually see your leaders around you being entrepreneurial, or are they just talking about it and being very operational? Similarly, how easy is it for you to start? And many organizations, including one I used to work with, effectively, you could only really get involved in entrepreneurship once you've done your day job. You hit your core metrics and then you do it on top. And some of us were brave enough to do it, but it's hard work, right? So carve out some space, make it easy for people to contribute. And going back to your previous question, you have to have the right metrics. So many people say, I've been given an entrepreneurial role. And I say, so how are you going to be recognized at the end of the year? And it's all on short-term, non-entrepreneurial metrics. So all of those building blocks have to be in place if you genuinely want to create an entrepreneurial culture and organization. Otherwise, it becomes a fancy initiative on top that you can talk about, but won't change the dial in terms of productivity, engagement, or any form of impact in the market.
Yes, got it. Again, I could ask so much more about that. We could go into that. I suggest, however, that people find you, because this is such an exciting field that you're clearing for us. And I think that this interplay between strategy and culture, someone who introduces it really from the center as opposed to from the strategist or the cultural view, is unique. I don't know anyone else that does it that way. So how can people continue to learn from you and stay connected with you?
Thank you. I post regularly on LinkedIn and look to engage and learn from other people. It's a two-way, three-way, four-way street. And on my site, davidlancefield.com, there's plenty of free resources sharing my writing, speaking, and others. And I look to spark that curiosity and positive impatience. I want to get stuff done as well. And that's the challenge with culture change, right? It takes longer.
A lot of seeding. Well, David, thank you for the work that you do, for articulating it so eloquently to us here. And thank you for your time.
Pleasure. You too.
Thank you to our guests. Thank you to our executive producer, Karina Reyes, our editor, Zach Ness, and the rest of the team. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. I'm your host, Kyan Krippendorf. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you soon with another episode of Outthinkers.